getting back to just what a consultant can
do. Go ahead, yeah, because I know there are a lot more things a consultant can do.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, the basic management systems. I spoke earlier, I don't want to repeat myself, but about, in all these various areas. I mean, that's probably the nuts and bolts of any kind of consulting program.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be able to make sure that we do these things well. I think a consultant can also help doctors and staff to communicate with each other. People have said that 85% of your success is based on how well you communicate with your staff and with your patients. Clinical ability is about 15%. I mean, I know that sounds tough for the doctors who think about wanting to be the best clinical dentist, but...
It's reality. I mean, there's no question about it. You can have the best clinician on the planet, and if they can't communicate with their patients, they're nothing. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So having a doctor in his staff, you often see, you ask them questions, and the doctor's on one planet and the staff's on another. And it's really, you've got to get them all on the same planet. And so I think a consultant can be helpful in that area. And once you have the confidence and the respect of the staff, this is really a lot of good things start happening. I think a good consultant will teach a practice how to go forward independently. You see, I mean, a consultant doesn't have to be an annuity. At some point you have to fly on your own. So it isn't like you have to have a consultant forever. You have to sort of develop a plan, go forward, and then when you disengage, maybe it can be on a gradual basis rather than, in one fell, one fell.
Right. Through. Okay. So this is not a lifetime commitment then.
No, it really
okay.
shouldn't be.
Okay. Good.
Consultants can teach accountability and teamwork. A lot of times, the doctor is the biggest problem in a practice because the doctor is expecting everybody else to do things, and then he or she doesn't play by the rules. So everybody, all the team members, including the doctor, have got to be compliant and accountable and responsible for their own tasks. Many times I find maybe 12 months, 15 months into a consulting project, maybe that's the right time to introduce bonuses and incentives to sort of keep the momentum going. And the reason I say that is because in the beginning, in most of these practices, there's a very large upward potential that can just be accomplished just teaching everybody to do what they're supposed to be doing and what they're being paid to do. It's when you reach that plateau that I think that you can start to use incentives to be able to move forward.
Right. Now, I know this interview is not on incentives and bonuses, but just out of curiosity, because I always wondered about this too, what would be a very typical bonus or incentive that you would recommend? Real briefly.
Okay. Well, what the one, I'm probably on my fifth one because you sort of learn and you try and you see what works and what doesn't. I like to be able very, very briefly to offer an incentive plan that's based on a combination of what's being produced and what's collected, usually two-thirds collection and one-third production, because it's hard to pay your bills with receivables. So you got to have a bonus plan that is, factored more towards collections.
Okay.
I like to take a four-month rolling average and just to say, okay, fine, here's really where we are. And now if we can go by that, I recommend that staff – sort of like it's 20 cents on the dollar over and above that average. So the doctor gets 80 cents, the staff gets 20% because the doctor's got to do that thing called overhead. And, that's about 60% in a well-run practice. So in a sense, we get to a plateau, we offer this incentive so that the doctor is almost sharing the growth 50-50 with the staff. It's amazing how staff respond to that.
Now, normally, are all staff members involved, or are the clinical staff involved a little more or less?
No, I think that it's we've got to be able to have. I find what works best is when it's a team thing. Trying to devise individual bonuses for individual people in the office is very hard. It's hard to measure their performance sometimes, and then when one person gets bonused more than the other, that creates ill will. When you've got a team thing going, I find that, say you get 10 staff, usually maybe six are good, three are pretty good and one's pathetic.
That's the norm.
And the pathetic person is sharing in that bonus system.
Yeah,
but staff sort of almost starts to self-police, and they say to that pathetic person, "Listen, buddy, you know, you better get get with it here, because you're sharing in this." And so it allows the staff to sort of get involved in policing that.
That's interesting. So you can kind of almost like self-correct a very poor staff member. It can bring them around, possibly.
Or they're gone. They're no longer welcome. They're not there. So, I mean, bonus is, I do believe my principle is that everybody should be paid a fair salary. I'd like to pay people on the high side rather than the low side. Just because I don't want them looking in the papers every day to find out where can I go.
Well, that's good. I think team members listening to this interview would love to hear you say that. And I agree with you. It's totally true.
Yeah. And so I think that they should be paid well, and they should be held accountable for their job. But if, in fact, staff can elevate and do better with various things, I'd like to be able to see them incentivized. You're never going to find a more staff-friendly person than me.
It sounds like it.
But I don't believe that bonus incentives go in right from the beginning.
I understand.
I believe we've got to sort of get to a certain level before we do that.
Perfect.
So I don't know. I mean, that's a bunch of stuff. I get involved a lot with retirement planning, pension things. This is really sort of something that I'm amazed at how far behind the curve so many dentists are when it comes to planning for retirement. You've heard that statistic, and I can bear it out, that maybe only 5 to 10% of dentists these days are going to be able to afford to retire, say, at that mythical age of 65.
Hard to believe. That's scary.
Because these guys and girls are considered high net worth individuals.
Yes, yes.
But somehow or other, I don't know why, but their accountant isn't looking at this, or they're not looking at this.
Sounds like a financial planner type thing too.
Yeah,
anybody with a good financial planner would be advised to, you've got to set money aside for retirement.
I'm thinking that people need to be saving their age in a plan that is qualified, and that they need to be thinking about this way before they're thinking about early retirement of debt. That's where I usually find the issue. The doctors are so busy about paying off practice loans and equipment loans and everything else like that they say, "Oh, I will get to my retirement when I get there." But, you know, this miracle of compound interest just, you know, passes
yes.
by if you're starting to save when you're 50 instead of saving when you're 25.
That's a pretty scary thing. So what is happening, dentists that are reaching retirement age have to keep working? There's
Absolutely.
Just no way out.
They cannot afford to retire.
Mayor, that's pretty scary to me.
It is. It is. And I think that people who are listening to this tape really need to take a look at what they've got saved and, you know, how long they want to be able to work. I think that everybody should get to a point in their life that they have the opportunity to retire from dentistry if they want to.
Right. So let me just say, to our listeners, if you're going to take one thing out of this, which I think you're going to get a lot more, but if you're going to take one thing out of this, make a note right now. If you do not have an adequate financial plan for retirement right now, you've got to get that, because we do not want to see you chained to the chair because you have to work at age 65, 68, 70. That would just be really, really sad. So make sure you've got that in place.
I would definitely agree with that.
So, Mayor, what about continuing on about things that a consultant will do? What about something like evaluating the facility?
Well, probably the facility, in my experience, the greatest source of stress in a practice is the lack of a proper facility. I was just talking to somebody this morning, and we were talking about expansion, and he has 3 treatment rooms, and he's starting to get busier and starting to get more new patients. That facility just will not allow him to be able to go forward. So he's got a year and a half left on his lease. He's now starting to think about, okay, a different facility. Each additional treatment room has the potential, minimally, of about $250,000 of production taking place there. So if you've got a room and you've got patients, that room's going to be busy all the time. And I feel that a facility evaluation is one of the really major things that people should be thinking about.
But it seems like that would be a tough one because, you know, getting out of a lease or moving your physical, you know, your facility there, it is not necessarily an easy thing to do.
No, it isn't. And I'm not saying that everybody should just, you know, get out of their facility tomorrow. But a lot of times you have leases that get renewed for a 5-year period, you know, because you want to make sure that, you know, you've got that in your agreement if you're not owning your own place, so that you can't get kicked out on the street. But usually you've got to almost make a commitment 6 months or a year before the lease is up. So you really maybe want to take a look, okay, am I going to be happy here for the next 5 years? Is this where I should stay for the next 5 years? So the facility evaluation is something that a consultant probably can help a lot with.